Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Group Answers Podcast. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt, and as always, Brandon Hiltebeitel.
Not always.
Maybe you're right. But he's always recently.
Start over.
He's becoming a fixture in the room.
It's a fixture.
Yeah, and he stepped in our last episode.
Okay, but if people may not know, even if he's not physically in the room, there is a Brandon footprint regardless.
Yeah, that's not weird.
No, but you go. You're a part of the planning. You do all of the topics.
That is correct.
You're a big part of that.
This is true. He came up with the power rankings, whether you like those or don't.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well.
Which I've had some feedback on both sides of that.
Okay,
but I like them. But Brandon stepped in last episode. We've now, I think this is episode number 104.
Ooh.
103 of those have involved Brian Daniel.
Oh, so I only missed one?
You missed the last one because you were on a secret mission to a country that we can't even
undisclosed.
You were probably in disguise, I would imagine.
Yeah,
which, in my mind, has a cowboy hat involved.
No.
That does not feel like the right disguise.
It had a scooter or a motorcycle as a part
just
of that.
Just keep it real low-key with a cowboy hat in a foreign country.
Yep.
But did you say yeehaw at any point?
All no. I know is it was 34 howdy. Hours in and
boy
it
howdy.
Was 34 hours out. Oh. And I'm still dragging. We were there 11 hours ahead of this time zone, and I was there for, 13 days? So re-entry's been tough.
Don't get into too many details.
Okay.
Because we may, on the next episode, dive into this trip.
Is that 105?
But 105. But right now, we've been told by the government not to talk about this.
Okay. But we do have a really cool topic for this show, though.
This will be fun. Yeah. This is a little bit of a spin on the power rankings, except we're not going to rank them. But we thought it would be fun to talk about secular disciple makers.
Open dialogue, right?
Yeah. We've had a conversation before on the best disciple makers in the Bible, and there was some tension. Would you guys agree with that?
Maybe some of the record tension in the history of the podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's without a doubt record tension.
Yeah. I mean, there were things thrown, chairs thrown, and it was
cut out. The listeners don't know that.
It got cut out. It got edited. But we're going to leave it in. And you know what's even cooler is we're videoing this one. This is our first.
Oh, is that why Joey's in here?
Joey's in the room. We've got cameras. There's one right there I'm pointing at.
And, there's two.
No, there's three.
Wow. We thought after three. The last one of these,
he's got the iPhone going.
People really would have wanted to see that.
That's right.
Because it got hot and bothered.
That's right.
Mostly Brandon Hiltebeitel, but it got hot and bothered. So we thought
I have passionate viewpoints. Let's do this.
But I think we typically think disciple makers, as we should, because that's what we do for a living. Mm-hmm. You know, disciple making is getting people to know Jesus. But if you look at the definition of disciple, it's learner, right? I mean, that is disciple making. So there are people out there, and they're, you know, some of the ones on the list are probably believers, Christians, but their main role is not getting people to know Jesus better and love him, but their role is to get people to love either themselves or their product or whatever.
Proselytizing of a different sort.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I think we can learn something, right, from people that do that. And so we've made some lists, and what we're going to do is we're going to start out with someone that we think is a positive secular disciple maker.
Yeah, something that we can take things from for our discipleship within the kingdom from viewing them out in the secular world.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You like that, Brian?
Yeah.
Brian has been gone for like 14 days.
Yeah.
So he's just catching up on this. And he's got a growth. If you can see this on YouTube or whatever, he's got a little bit of growth going on there with the beard. It's been.
Yeah.
You said it was a rough reentry. Is that
Yeah. 3 days and 14 days growth are about the same for me. It doesn't change. It doesn't. I don't think it grows after 3 days.
That's your limit. Okay.
Yeah,
all right. So let's get this kicked off. And so let's start with Brandon Common Spelling Hiltebeitel, because this was your idea. Who do you have as a positive secular disciple maker?
So as weird as it may sound, the first name that came to my head on this topic was Mary Kay. And apparently Mary Kay Ash is the full name of the founder of the Mary Kay Empire. And if you know anything about her essentially her marketing empire, it's basically a discipleship framework. It's Mary Kay made disciples of people who passionately sell beauty products. They make disciples of people who passionately sell beauty products. Those people make disciples. And literally, it's a it's 2 Timothy 2:2 for beauty products. It's entrust to faithful men who will teach others also, and on and down the line. So you've got Mary Kay begat Mary Kay begat Mary Kay, on and on and on.
Question.
Yes.
How much do you know about, like, did your mom or someone in your family sell Mary Kay growing up?
I have only had my wife be invited to the parties.
And that's the first name that came up.
That's the first name that came up to
See,
me.
There had to now, be some other
now, doTERRA
exposure.
I guess is the similar, but I don't know enough about how that actually, with the essential oils, that's probably similar.
I think Brandon's
onto
something, because when I think Mary Kay, I think my mom. Now, is Mary Kay still relevant to this? Obviously, the three of us are the wrong people to talk about this, but is she still relevant to the?
I have no idea.
But that's the first name.
That's the first name that came, because whether she's relevant today or not, she legitimately built an empire
for a generation
it's life on life. You do what I do, so it's watch what I do, you do, I help, on and on and on. And people, whether they are now, they were wildly passionate about it.
All right, give
me my pink
Cadillac. Yeah. Yes.
Question number two, then. I mean, what do you know about the process? Because to me, my mom did sell Mary Kay, and I felt like it wasn't because she loved the product. She may have, but it was because of the income that could come out of
money.
That.
Yeah. Same thing. It is the same thing with essential oils. You get a cut of what your disciples make. But
they believe in the mission? Like, did your mom selling Mary Kay just want the money, or did she believe in the mission of what Mary Kay was about?
I was like 8 years old and didn't understand any of that.
I
haven't thought about it until just this moment.
My mom was a disciple maker.
Had no idea.
And she made money at it. We need to figure that part out.
It probably varies person to person, but there are certainly people, you know, you take the same model in different
Amway.
Yeah.
But the deeper you go, so how do I phrase this? The more successful you are, the more passionate you seem to be about the company and those kinds of things.
I mean, you can see all kinds of this stuff on Facebook right now. And whether they believe it or not, you would believe they believe it by watching them. And that's one of the most directly applicable things that we could take into the kingdom is, man, we're trying to make disciples who then do the same thing. Who then those people do the same thing, and it's so easy to get choked at the first group. But when you look at something like, man, they stinking sold makeup around the world or essential oils around the world with this invest and expand strategy, it makes me feel mildly to massively convicted.
Well, I know we have to move on, but I would add to that the mark of a disciple. You said pink Cadillac. I mean, Mary Kay was marked by pink. I mean, they marked themselves. I mean, you knew someone that was a disciple associated with that brand by the mark.
And that's a
positive thing.
And I would say the pink Cadillac marked a mature disciple.
Yeah.
Because, right, you have to get so far into the company that you... So we got to start marking our disciples.
There's sermon outlines starting everywhere right now.
This is good. You know how far out of the loop I was? When I saw this name on the list, I thought Mary Kate and Ashley.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
I thought that's who that was.
All right, guys.
Well, because it's a first name. It's one of those, you know, there's some personalities that you just know by first name. There is no last name.
And my daughters growing up were obsessed with Mary Kate and Ashley. So, all right, well, that's a good one. I like it. I didn't understand it at first.
What you got?
Now I get it.
What you got?
I'm going to go with this guy. Anything I see written about him, I read it. I love everything about it. It's Walt Disney. I mean, as I dig in, you know, there's obviously all of these people. There's bad sides. There's good sides. And, you know, he had his thing. But I think as a company and getting disciples, I don't know many people that were better. I mean, I think when you think through the years, you know, Henry Ford was kind of the first guy who created a new product and people really, and then there was Walt Disney. And I think, you know, if you go beyond that, there's Steve Jobs. And But just what he created, it wasn't just a product. It was a lifestyle. You know, if you watched his program on Sunday night, it was Walt. And, you know, it's his signature on every movie. And, you know, he was very hands-on with it. And it had to have certain standards and values. And you may not agree with all of those, but if you saw something that Walt Disney touched, it meant he approved it. I mean, all the way even to the Disneyland, to the parks. I got to go last year with my daughter to the original Disneyland. I mean, I've been to Disney World several times, went to Disneyland as a kid, but we went, and it was fun because I tried to look at it through Walt's eyes, because they even have where his room was as he watched. It's over the fire station, if you've ever been there, and they still have the lamp. He would sit there every day, and he would watch them build the park. You know, he was the one that kind of coined the phrase, everything speaks, because he said everything in the park matters. And so he had his Imagineers go around the park on their knees at the level of kids to see what they saw. And so really it's that level of detail that he put into his company and in disciple making. You know, it mattered. Everything mattered. Everything spoke. And so he was a part of that. He didn't let any of that just happen by chance. So, yeah, I would say Walt Disney was a pretty good disciple maker.
To walk the park on your knees sounds so incredibly painful right now.
Yeah, I do not want to be an Imagineer.
I think they had knee pads, I'm guessing. But even he would change the pavement as you walk from world to world.
Yeah.
Like you even if you weren't looking down, you could tell you were in a different world by, you know, how your feet felt. That's a level of detail that I think we don't always get to.
So I might be able to out Disney you. I've read 4 or 5 biographies, but also wrote for Walt Disney News Today for a season of my life.
Yep.
But also had him as number one, I think, in terms of influences on the 20th century in America. He may have had the greatest influence on 20th century America, which is really saying something for a guy from, was it Marceline, Missouri? I think it was.
Yep.
So what I would add to what Chris has already said about Walt Disney in terms of like the discipleship, because there are Disney disciples. There were in the 50s, I think kids of the baby boomer generation, the Gen X kids, now with their kids have reintroduced all of the Disney properties to their. So you've got this second generation of Disneyers. And Chris, you may have picked up in the books, you know, I would have thought before I started reading about him that he was like this ultra creative guy, and he wasn't necessarily. He was not a great animator. He was certainly not a great businessman. Roy pretty much saved that
out. Roy ran the business.
Yeah, and Walt never really had a ton of money. I mean, to his credit, I think he invested it back in to whatever he had going on at the time. He was really, when it gets down to it, he was a hobbyist. But there's a book called The Animated Man, I think it was the one that I remember. And what my takeaway from there was, in terms of discipleship, was Walt Disney sold out to his medium, which was animation.
Yeah.
Everything spun out of that. The whole idea behind the parks was to put people, families, into animation. That's why the buildings were where they were. That's why they had characters walking around. So I think the takeaway for me was, what you learn from it is, you don't have to necessarily be great at something, but sell out to what you believe in.
Leave it
all on the field.
Yeah, and that speaks to how involved he was in the details, is he was sold out to what he was selling.
Yeah, and I mean, so are there negatives for Walt? I mean, when you were thinking about this, did you go back and forth whether he could have been positive or negative?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he probably got too much in the minutia a little bit. One of my favorite stories comes from Roy, and he said that they would get so many ideas from Walt that they couldn't do all of them, and Walt would get upset that they just couldn't do it. They didn't have the technology, or they didn't have the money yet, or whatever. So finally, Roy went to Walt and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to designate a drawer in your secretary's desk, and that's going to be your idea drawer. So whenever you come up with an idea, instead of going and finding somebody and telling them they have to create it right then, which is what Walt did, he said, write it down on a card. We're going to go into that drawer. I don't know if it's once a week or once a month. I don't know what the rhythm was. We're going to dig it out, and we're going to find one that we can pull off now. And one of those was the Talking Abraham Lincoln, which if you've ever been to Disneyland, it's still there. It's as cheesy as you get now. But back then, it was cutting edge, and they, you know, they couldn't have done it when Walt came up with it, but they finally could make it happen. So one key point I say out of that is we all need a Roy. We all need somebody that partners with us, that sees the bad side and helps us kind of round that out. You know, if you have a secondary leader in your group or somebody that you work with to help disciple others, you know, that's helpful for all of us.
I would say on the negative side, Walt Disney, who is my number one on the positive, so just to add a negative, is he built too much. And I think it was unwitting, really, in his time because it's all he knew, but there was too much of it that was built around him. That company almost went under after he died. There was no succession plan. There was no person that had been taken under his wing to learn the business. It was all 100% Walt. And so you had a disciple maker of sorts, let's just call it that, who was making disciples but then had no one to turn the keys over to perpetuate the whatever you want to call the movement that was Walt Disney of that time.
That's good. He didn't have his 12 disciples to
no, put it on. No, no. And the seven, and was it the 70s? And the 70s was really bad.
Yeah.
And there's a documentary called Waking Sleeping Beauty that you guys ought to watch. It's a great documentary on leadership.
All right. We need to move on. And we talked about a positive one.
We got now, Disney done.
Yeah, we got Disney. I think we hit that one. Let's talk negative. So, Brandon, who did you have as someone who has created disciples, but maybe not in the best way?
So the first one that came to mind for me on this one was Steve Jobs. And he may be on some positive list.
Shut your mouth.
I know. But, you know, he changed the world. There could be probably a debate on whether or not even that was positive or negative. But certainly the way he did it seems to reflect poorly in hindsight on how he treated people. And I'm not an expert on Steve Jobs, but from what I read, his relationships with people could have been smoother, and his family life certainly could have been different. And so, you know, if I compare him to Jesus, you know, obviously Jesus changed the world, but Jesus changed the world by changing people, by growing people, rather than changing things and introducing things. He wanted to make all things new spiritually, and that started with people. And I feel like it's almost Steve Jobs had as somewhat of the opposite approach. Let me make new things, you know, people, take them or leave them. So
I would agree with that. I'm obviously an Apple fan. I'm wearing an Apple Watch. I have an iPhone. I have a Mac. But I read, did you guys read Steve Jobs, the biography, Walter Isaacson? It's fascinating.
I read magic fiction, Chris.
Yeah, that's true. You should expand your genre. But it's a great book. They based the movie off of that book loosely. But anyways, he did use people.
Yeah,
he used people to gain what he needed to, and then when he was done with them, they were
done.
Yeah,
and that's the opposite of discipleship. One of the fastest way to hurt a church is to try to grow things by hurting people.
Yeah,
rather than growing people being the goal that Jesus left us. So
no, that's good. But I'm hanging on to my Apple Watch.
Yeah,
that's,
don't sell your Apple stock.
No,
man, I gotta be honest. I wrestle with that a little bit. I don't disagree with you at all.
Let's wrestle.
But there is. When you look at, like, in the case of Apple, he made shareholders wealthy, which was his job. That was his job, not to make people feel good about themselves. And probably the people that worked for him made out pretty good, too, even though they didn't get treated. They were probably running the ground. It's just a contra position to take. I agree with you. I am not a Steve Jobs fan at all, and that is not and would not be the way that I would choose to lead. But in terms of secular discipleship, I mean, secular, I mean, that word is used for a reason.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting take on that.
I think he set the table for some really bad managers and entrepreneurs on how they thought it had to get done.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I look at somebody like Elon Musk. I read his biography as well. And he's worse than Steve Jobs.
Yeah,
I mean,
I heard that too.
I read that, and I love, you know, what he's building. I love Teslas. I'll never own one, but I like looking at them. You know, SpaceX is amazing.
Yeah,
what he's
probably
done there.
I don't own one of those either.
Yeah, and the new, you know, boring company where they're digging tunnels through LA. Okay.
Thank you.
But he completely uses people, and he doesn't even couch that in good terms. It's like, I'm going to use them till I don't need them or they don't perform up to my standards, and then they're done.
Talk about the opposite of the gospel.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. It's the opposite of the gospel, but it works in the world to some extent. You wonder, I think I would wonder, so does it work? I mean, is it working? I mean, did Steve Jobs die a fulfilled man? I mean, we won't know that, and can't know that. It's just an interesting juxtaposition between holy and secular.
And if you've seen the meme or what's supposed to be Steve Jobs' last words, where he recanted, and all, it's false. That's not real.
Yeah,
just putting that out there. All right, Brian, who'd you have as a negative secular disciple maker?
Well, I don't know how to entree this, but I am going to go sports on this one, Brandon. This is near and dear to your heart.
This is where I wanted to get. Thank you.
Okay. So this is a guy, LeBron James, LBJ. I liked him with Cleveland go-around number one. I think it can be safely said that he became the LeBron James we know now once he went to Miami. He was real good in Cleveland, but he became this cult leader, and about the same time Twitter really emerged, and that's when he went to Miami and built that super team down there and then went back to Cleveland. But it's been in the last two or three years when he's become essentially the general manager of the teams that he plays for. And my understanding is he has a agency called Clutch Media that he runs.
That's unofficial.
Yeah, that's right. That's unofficial. That's right. Fair enough. But he has his hands on a lot.
Yeah.
And so he's got the show on either HBO or Showtime called The Shot, which actually is pretty good. And he's got a movie coming out. Is that right, Brandon?
Supposedly, there's going to be a Space Jam 2.
Space Jam 2, wow. Maybe. Hmm. And then he's got a game show on. So he is a mogul now, which is, I'm not picking on that. I think that really works for him. But he's got this side gig as a basketball player with the Lakers. So they didn't make the playoffs this year, and it wasn't LeBron's fault. But it's been interesting to watch how that's transpired over the last 4 to 5 years. And he's gone from this guy that was extremely likable to someone that maybe isn't quite as likable as he once was.
You know what's telling for me on that is, and this may all just be rumors and it'll be disproved in this free agency season, but you hear over and over these superstars like Kevin Durant and all these other guys who actually don't want to go play with LeBron.
Yeah.
And it's for a lot of reasons. But 2 years ago, 3 years ago, if that would, when he went to Miami, it was like, who doesn't want to go play with LeBron? Is marriage ministry stressing you out? Woo Marriage is here to help. This brand new tool from Lifeway provides Christ-centered marriage coaching for every couple in your church. Backed by research and designed with your church in mind, Woo Marriage provides a plan for your marriage ministry with video courses for all seasons of marriage. There are courses for communication, managing finances, handling conflict, and there's even help for church leaders. The best part? It's easy. With one simple click, you can assign courses and start coaching. Whether you need to prepare couples for marriage, strengthen marriages, or restore relationships, you'll have an affordable, flexible plan right at your fingertips. Try it free for 1 month with offer code LEADERSHIP, that's all one word, not case sensitive, at checkout. That's offer code LEADERSHIP, all one word, at checkout on woomarriage.com/free trial.
So Brandon is the more confident speaker into this, but as I've watched this kind of emerge, and granted I haven't watched it with this through these filters until like 5 minutes ago, but it's the way that he treats the players next to him. It seems like he works back channels. There are cryptic or subtext tweets about the people that he plays with, about the leadership on his teams, that's very undermining and not encouraging and not supportive.
Yeah.
And it's become kind of cancerous. And it's just interesting because LeBron does have disciples. I have friends that are not NBA fans. They are LeBron fans. It doesn't matter if he's playing for Miami, Cleveland, or L.A. They're going to pull for the team that he plays for. And if they're not in the playoffs, they don't watch the playoffs. So that's what I would call a LeBron disciple. And I'm just wondering what they are learning from this method, tactic, this leadership that he's has come to embody?
Although I could talk about NBA all day, but to take it to the discipleship space, the guys that leave LeBron's team, like, it's just happening now all the time. The guys that lead his team perform better somewhere else. Better things happen for them. He is not, like, if the goal is to, in the kingdom, if the goal is to shepherd people towards joy in Jesus, if they're finding outside of that relationship a whole lot more fruit and a whole lot more progress spiritually, then that means what you're doing to try to make disciples is obviously counterproductive. I would say, as a counterpoint, I would put Michael Jordan perhaps in that category as well. But Steph Curry, like, people say Steph Curry's changed the game of basketball. Little kids now are shooting 30-foot jumpers, and maybe they can't make them, but he's basically said, follow me as I follow the most beautiful game of basketball, and it's helping reshape basketball. And so,
and he chews on his mouthpiece, which is just gross.
Don't do that, guys.
Don't do that.
But the goal of helping people move towards joy in Jesus is a measure of how you are doing as a disciple maker. And I would say that we see, you know, maybe some hints of that in sports.
All right, we just have a few minutes left, like 5 minutes, so we need to wrap this up. But real quick.
It's been good, though, Chris.
Yes, this is a good discussion. If you've got one that's positive and one nugget about them, let's do that to wrap this up. You got one more that's positive?
Well, I had Phil Knight.
I had the same one.
Yeah. Well, there
Shoe
you go.
Dog.
Yeah. So you've read all those books. I don't know what I would say about Phil Knight other than he has tapped into the ethos of—
Phil Knight started Nike, by the way, listeners.
Yes, good.
He's tapped into the ethos of what, of an element of our humanity. He demonstrates, in growing that Nike brand, he demonstrates a very keen awareness of who we are. And you feel like, even more so than Jobs, I feel like Jobs knew me as a computer user or technology user. I feel like Phil Knight knows me as a human being. So he transcends his genre, I think.
Yeah, and if you've read Shoe Dog, the one thing that I got out of it was that he empowered people, that he found people's strengths and put them in hopefully the right places and then empowered them down the line to make the company better. And it doesn't feel like he's using people as much. And there's been some bad stuff that's come out about Nike in the last couple of years. So we're going before that. But he empowered people and kind of created disciple makers within the company, a little bit like Mary Kay, that has continued on and on. And I'm a huge Nike fan. I wear Nikes almost every day.
And Brian's a huge Mary Kay fan.
Yes. Yeah. So, Brandon, what's yours? One thought.
No, I really desperately wanted to talk about Steph Curry, and I already got the chance to do that.
Okay, good. And I hate Steph Curry right now because he put my team, the Rockets, out of the playoffs.
But he did it beautifully.
He did.
And it's transformative.
And it's unattainable.
But I love it. I don't know when this posts, but what I love is, so they lost Cousins and they lost Durant, and I like them more.
They're a fun team to watch.
I get more Steph Curry, and they're more open.
That's off the topic. And I have some hatred in my heart right now.
I know.
So I'll work through it. Disciple me through that. All right. So we need to talk about another podcast that's on our network. We are part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. And it's the EST podcast, which stands for, what does it stand for, Brian?
Established churches.
He caught me drifting.
I'm sorry.
Sick. That's
Once
okay.
he goes into promo mode, I kind of just start looking
the
around
fact
the room.
That the headphones are still on.
Sam Rayner, Micah Fries, and Josh King as part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network family. They've recently covered topics like ageism and church leadership, leading a multi-generational church, and former and current pastor friends. Just look up EST on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today.
That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answer Show. Thanks for being with us. Like always, we'd encourage you to find us on iTunes and leave a comment and rate us. Those things do make a difference. Thanks to Brandon Hiltebeitel, yes. Our regular contributor.
Yes.
I will reiterate.
Yep.
And as always, Chris Surratt, this is Brian Daniel. We look forward to being with you again soon.
Becoming a church that cares well for the abused is a curriculum designed to equip the church on how to respond well to the initial report of abuse. This curriculum brings together top experts from various fields to help leaders understand and implement the best practices for handling a variety of abuse scenarios at church, school, or ministry. To learn more or to get it for free, text CHURCHCARES to 888-111.